Digest fans, I am going to be taking a break from doing the Free Talk Live Daily Digest until the end of the year, and I'll be starting back up on January 2nd, which will be a Monday. So I will not do the January 1st show, but I will be doing the Monday night show of Free Talk Live. Thank you very much for your support, and if you want to support the Digest, details on how to support me and my efforts of doing the Daily Digest will be later on in this episode.
Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
I did have a gentleman call in just before the show to ask if we had heard that Adam Kokesh is out of jail. And yes, we have heard that. In fact, we have Adam booked for an interview coming up on Saturday night. So if you want to hear directly from the source as to what had happened to him over the last 2 weeks of him being imprisoned in some cruddy little county in Colorado, the good news is they dropped the charges. So case dismissed.
Oh my God. I didn't hear that. That's fantastic news.
It's great news.
It's crazy.
Now, Bonnie had asked, well, he's not here yet, so I can presume that it's because they didn't want to go up against him. They didn't realize they were dealing with an activist and a network of supporters, and they...
Constant phone calls.
And also dealing with a religious use of psychedelic mushrooms.
For veterans.
For a veteran, yeah. So, I mean, did they really want to bring that in front of a jury? I guess not. And they decided relatively quickly that they didn't.
Chickens.
So they dropped the charge.
What awful human beings they are.
And there are some court cases out there that support the right of an individual to use a psychedelic mushroom specifically for spiritual religious purposes, including in New Hampshire. I know, Bonnie, you wanted to discuss the Tiananmen Square cover-up that continues to this day. I mean, this was, what, 1989 or something when Tiananmen Square happened? And the Chinese government is still working hard to prohibit the Chinese people from finding out about this particular historic event that many of us remember. And it's one of those images that just burns into your mind.
I was 14 years old, and I'll never forget. I think that may have actually had something to do with me going down the path I did politically. Mm. You know, I was a good Republican child until I saw that. And that, you know, back then I believed in freedom still. And when I saw that, freedom took on a kind of a different definition. Like, I didn't understand that the Chinese people, you know, the communists are so iron-fisted and totally controlling of everybody and everything in their society. You see that one little man run out in front of that army tank and it spoke...
Yeah, just a man with a briefcase, right? Just standing in front of
a humongous... It was like a grocery bag.
Yeah,
oh, is it groceries?
He wasn't even a part of the... he wasn't even really a part of the
counter-protest?
The counter-protest until he was in the moment and found himself in the middle of it. And he saw army tanks coming and ran out. He just out to get groceries for his family. And he ran out in front of that army tank and stopped it.
I just find it interesting that in the Adam Kokesh case, they didn't even arraign him. Like, I've never heard of that before in any case.
It's because he refused to speak. Oh.
He refused to leave his jail cell, actually. Hmm. So he spoke in the form of a letter to the judge that was delivered at the second attempt to bring him into the arraignment. But guards came to his jail cell, attempted to, hey, all right, it's time to go to your court hearing. And he just didn't leave his cell. And they weren't going to make him, apparently. So, like here, there was a time when Lauren Canario, who was one of the earliest movers here for the New Hampshire Free State Project, she's a much smaller little lady. Like, she's nowhere near the size of an Adam Kokesh.
Right.
And they would just take her and physically lift her into a wheelchair, because she also refused to cooperate.
That's right.
Wow.
With the police. But they would physically move her into and out of the courtrooms and the jail cells. In Kokesh's case, they just let him sit in the jail. So they would have had an arraignment, but they did not.
But I just find that shocking because I've never heard of a case like that before. And also, too, on the religious liberty front, I've heard about other people doing similar things to, like, how the way magic mushrooms are handled in that case. There's this group out of North Carolina where literally they're doing their religion to get around the food safety laws from the state.
Everybody remembers Tank Man, but there was, you know, a reason why the military was there, and that was due to protesters, student-led protests that were happening. I've got a story here from the BBC about what happened back then. But what's happening right now, Bonnie, is you're saying the Chinese government from Beijing has put pressure on the Hong Kong University there in Hong Kong, which, again, up until, I think, 1997, Hong Kong was ruled by the British. And then their lease ran out, as I understand it. The British walked away from Hong Kong. And since then, the Chinese government has been slowly tightening the noose on that particular area.
And those people are used to a Western influenced way of life too.
Yes.
They are not communists like you and I would think of communism. You know,
it's one of the most probably capitalist places on the planet.
Yeah, they're very economically free.
They still win in economic freedom chart rankings. Like the most recent one, they're still on top.
I have a feeling the Chinese will screw that up royally because communists don't know how to do capitalism.
Doubt.
They don't understand individual drive or free will. They don't get it.
What else do we need to know, Bonnie, about this situation?
Students are currently on break for their festive period, but John's...
Oh, so they took it down while the students weren't there?
Yep. This next quote from the sculptor shows that
he's mad. He says it's his private property and he wants compensation.
Yeah, but I think this next part of the quote kind of shows that he doesn't fully get it. It is a disgrace and an abuse that shows that Hong Kong has become a brutal place without laws and regulations, such as protecting the population, the arts, and private property. And it's even more grotesque that they used the Western holiday Christmas to carry out the destruction of their artwork. My point of saying maybe he doesn't get it is he thinks, like, oh, we need more laws and regulations to protect my artwork. I don't know.
Well, from the people who make laws and regulations. Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe he's speaking in terms of rights.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people think that government should exist to protect rights. I mean, that's sort of the fantasy about government.
Right.
So, I mean, of course he doesn't get it as far as, obviously he's not an anarchist or a voluntarist or whatever, but he's certainly not wrong of the belief system, from his belief system that government should be protecting my private property, not destroying it. I mean, that in theory is what they're supposed to do, but not obviously the Chinese government.
Totally childlike naivete.
The head of the journalism school at HKU, Keith Richberg, tweeted in the early hours of Thursday, the day that they did it, "Don't do this." But they did it anyway.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like the rest is just like history of the statue.
Yeah, and so I was kind of interested in the history of the event. According to the BBC, in the 1980s, the Communist Party began to allow some private companies and foreign investment. At the time, their president Deng Xiaoping hoped to boost the economy and raise living standards, but the move brought with it corruption while at the same time raising hopes for greater political openness. At the time, the Communist Party was divided between those urging more rapid change and the hardliners wanting to maintain strict state control. In the mid-1980s, student-led protests began. And those taking part included people who had lived abroad and been exposed to new ideas and higher standards of living. In spring of 89, the protests grew with demands for greater political freedom. Those protesters were spurred on by the death of a leading politician, Hu Yaobang, who had overseen some of the economic and political changes. He had been pushed out of a top position in the party by political opponents a couple of years prior to that. Tens of thousands of people gathered on the day of Hu's funeral in April of 1989, calling for greater freedom of speech and less censorship. In the following weeks, protesters gathered in Tiananmen Square, with numbers estimated to be up to 1 million. In the 1800s, Hong Kong became a colony of the British Empire after the Qing Empire in China ceded Hong Kong Island from Xin'an County at the end of the First Opium War in 1841, and the colony expanded to the Kowloon Peninsula in 1860 after the Second Opium War and was further extended when Britain obtained a 99-year lease of the new territories in 1898. And so what is it now? According to the story here, it is now what is called a Chinese Special Administrative Region. So it's not quite yet a Chinese city. It's not the same thing as every other Chinese city.
Well, they can march their soldiers in there at will anytime and enforce the will of the Chinese dictators on those people.
They can, but there is an interesting detail here. The colony, it says, faced an uncertain future as the end of the new territory's lease approached. And Governor Murray McLeos raised the question of Hong Kong's status with Deng Xiaoping in 1979. Diplomatic negotiations with China resulted in the 1984 Sino-British Joint Declaration, in which the UK agreed to transfer the colony in 1997, and China would guarantee Hong Kong's economic and political systems for 50 years after the transfer. The Legislative Council in Hong Kong became a fully elected legislature for the first time in 1995 and extensively expanded its functions and organizations through the last years of colonial rule. Hong Kong was transferred to China on July 1st of 1997 after 156 years of British rule. Immediately afterwards, Hong Kong was severely affected by several crises. The government was forced to use substantial foreign exchange reserves to maintain the Hong Kong dollar's currency peg during the 1997 Asian financial crisis. And then they had the H5N1 avian flu outbreak. A housing surplus was followed by the SARS epidemic, during which the territory experienced its most serious economic downturn. Political debates after the transfer of sovereignty have centered around the region's democratic development and the central government's adherence to the one country, two systems principle. After reversal of the last colonial-era legislative council democratic reforms following the handover, the regional government unsuccessfully attempted to enact national security legislation, and the central government decision to implement nominee pre-screening before allowing chief executive elections triggered a series of protests in 2014, which became known as the Umbrella Revolution.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
We talked a few weeks ago about this bill and the provision that says that by 2026, there will be DUI checks in every single new vehicle, meaning that you, as a driver who has never had a drink before in your life, will be subjected to being a suspect as a potential DUI, and you will have to pass whatever this technology is. And they hadn't decided yet at the time that the bill was passed what the technology will be. So they're leaving that up to the Department of Transportation or some bureaucracy to determine what to use. And the news was, this is going to be true of every car manufactured. They said it could be as soon as 2026. Now, that was also a kind of a question mark as far as when the final date will be, when this will take effect. But it could be as soon as 2026, where every new car will have at least one, if not more than one, form of technology to detect your blood alcohol content and either stop you from, or either let you drive or stop you from even turning the car on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what it sounds like is some type of AI that's going to learn you. And if you drive outside the bounds of what it has learned about you, then it will basically prevent you from turning the car on, or it'll just shut your car off. The Rush song Red Barchetta, or Red Barchetta, it's about a motor law that was passed, and this kid likes to escape the cities to go out to his uncle's farm, where his uncle has preserved this old red sports car, and he likes to take it out for illegal spins, and he gets chased down by the cops, and he leaves him at the riverside because he goes across a bridge that's too narrow for them.
Nice.
But it kind of reminds me of that. It's like, what kind of are we going to be allowed, if we want to get around this type of thing? I have a 1976 Volkswagen Beetle back in New York, right?
And wow,
I love that car. It's a carbureted car. It's about as fast as a lawnmower, but it'll run on just about anything I dump in the gas tank, as long as it resembles gas. And it doesn't ask me any questions. It doesn't have any computers. It's got a cap and rotor. It doesn't have electronic ignition. There's nothing to fry.
Right.
You know?
So it'll survive an EMP, is what you're saying?
Almost.
Almost. Okay.
It'll fry some easily replaceable $2 pieces, which I have extras in the glove box anyway. It's a tune-up component that gets killed. So that said, are they going to ban old cars?
That's a great question. I mean, they're not going to do it right out the gate.
Yeah, maybe right? later down the road.
They need to make it so the mandated cars are going to be in the used car marketplace.
Mm-hmm. I was just trying to think of workarounds for that, you know?
Besides just buying old cars?
Yeah, just, well, yeah. Yes and no and yes. So everybody's, or most people probably heard of a Shelby Cobra. Old sports car. If anybody's seen Ford versus Ferrari with Matt Damon, the newer movie that came out last year, it was really an awesome job they did on that movie. Carroll Shelby brought together two companies to make an amazing sports car back in the 60s called the Cobra. Had an AC body out of Great Britain, and it had big Ford engines, and they were just fast, insane little fast cars. Well, they stopped making them in 1967. Mm-hmm. The last Cobra was made in 67. However, today, you can still buy a brand new, it's called a continuation car, a brand new Shelby Cobra.
In the 1967 format?
You can buy a brand new 1967 Shelby Cobra. No.
Oh.
A brand new.
Who's making them?
A company called Superformance has the rights from Shelby.
Huh.
To make those cars.
Does that upset Ford a little bit?
I don't think Ford ever had a say in it.
Hmm. They're just their engines?
It's a Chevy licensed thing. They can buy as many Ford engines as they want to put into these things.
Huh.
And they are brand new cars titled as 67s.
Whoa. It may be an exhaustive list, but what are some of the things that they've been forcing on all car manufacturers for the last...
Well, I mean, we've seen the have you ever parked? I looked at a 2022 Camaro the other day, brand new Camaro SS, gorgeous car. Looks a lot like the original 1967, 68 Camaros. Mm-hmm. If you were to park a 67 or 68 Camaro next to that modern Camaro SS, even though they're the same shape, you'll notice that the new Camaro SS is a lot bigger. It's a big, fat, chonky car.
Probably heavier.
Way heavier. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is it's all impact zone this and airbag that. And, you know, every time you add another nut or bolt to a car, not to mention just the dimensions in order to house it to make it look, you know, if you look at a new Porsche 911, oh, it's a 911. It's a shape that's, you know, you can identify that shape 100 miles away. Well, if you put a brand new 911 next to even a 2002 911, it's just a huge car compared to the old cars. They're not, and the reason is they have to magnify the size of the car just so they can fit in all the government crap.
God, it's terrible.
It's totally horrible.
I've been working on cars all my life and own my own repair shop. But, yeah, the cars keep advancing, and they do record a lot of information that a lot of people driving them are not aware of it. And the information's recorded a lot for technicians to be able to repair a car. Well, what was it doing when this happened? And so, like, if airbag goes off, it records the speed, brake, and a lot of other things nowadays on cars. It's easily accessible. In 2026, a lot of cars will drive themselves. Or come close to it. It may not be fully where you just get it in the car and let it go, but it will be very advanced in the next 4 years.
Yeah, I already have a Kia that kind of does it itself, and that's a Kia.
So, which is cheap, right?
Yeah, it wasn't really a cheap car, but it's a cheap car.
That's kind of what Kia is known for, is affordable.
Yeah, and rides. it's a great car. I mean, you set the cruise control, and it basically pays attention to the lines for you, and it will go around the bends, and you know,
it'll make
turns.
Yeah,
I was gonna say it makes turns for you. He showed me.
Yeah, I took Bonnie out when I first got it and went out for a ride, and I was like, "Look, Bonnie, no hands," and it keeps its own speed. It'll slow down if there's a car in front of you. It'll speed up when it speeds up.
Are you like me and a lot of other people that are just not interested in these brand new cars that are coming out?
No, I'm not. Number one, that's a big waste of money.
Sure.
You know, it depreciates higher rate than anything else you'll buy. And I see it now. People repair cars more and more because the cost of replacing them is getting to be so expensive.
Yeah, there's
in
that.
In the future, electric cars and self-driving cars, I wouldn't buy a new car right now. If I did, it'd probably be electric because I wouldn't want to be the guy stuck with a gas car
in the near future.
That's what I'm thinking. I want an old gas car that I can convert to alcohol, because I can get a still and some sugar, corn, grass, and I can make alcohol to dump in that gas tank.
And also, Ford's already offering their electric Mustang motor as a replacement engine for older cars.
I know. Wow. I saw that.
A lot of that in the future. I think eventually, this is my opinion, I think we'd be better off. I'd like to have it on my truck. If you could buy aftermarket self-driving kit, or at least something like you were talking about your Kia doing, where it follows the lanes and helps you out.
Yeah, it's just got an eyeball built into the rearview mirror.
I think that this electric vehicle thing is a complete fad because of Biden. Like, this happened whenever Obama was in as the president, you know, green, 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 and then Trump became the president, and, you know, it all went back to gasoline. And not only that, I still don't think the technology behind batteries that power electric vehicles are, you know, evolved enough to be able to really support our true driving habits. I mean, I go through a tank of gas a week, you know, that's probably about 420 miles in my current car. Mm-hmm. And if I were to do that, you know, cross country, or, you know, just go from one destination to another, you know, I don't even know what the range is for a car, for an electric vehicle now, but surely it's not more than 100 miles on
they're way over 100 miles now. The Nissan Leaf is approaching 100 miles, and that's just an around-town kind of car.
Isn't the Tesla over 100?
Yeah, the Teslas are all over 100, but that's still not – 100 miles is not good enough. Like, about somebody like me with my job – well, my day job, in non-COVID times, when I'm actually visiting my accounts, it's totally possible for me to put 12 or 1,300 miles on in a week. So that's or 5 days
and
worth.
And then,
I would love to have a Tesla that would do that for me, but it's not going to work. I mean, I cannot possibly cover that amount of territory in an electric car.
Well, I used to drive my parents' car, but but when I was young, but after a big wreck, I couldn't drive my cars anymore.
Oh, you got in a car wreck?
At least three of them so far. That's why I'm really afraid of cars.
That explains a lot.
Some people shouldn't be behind a wheel, and I guess you're one of them. So were you the cause of the wrecks, or were you, like, you know, the victim?
Well, I think I was sometimes the cause of the – I think a couple of times I was the cause of it, and one time I was the victim. But it's still traumatizing.
Yeah.
But I'm all in for the electric cars and fuel cell cars and clean environment. And, you know,
you hear Matt say just a moment ago that the batteries, acquiring them, the chemicals, the things that go into these batteries, the
amount
metals,
of diesel the trucks pulling it out of the ground are using?
that you're actually going to damage the environment more just by continuing the manufacture of these things? Doesn't that concern you?
Well, I think the clean air outweighs the battery polluting part of it. That's my bent on it.
Your government today is doing things that you think only other people's governments do. It is engaged in murder. It is engaged in extortion. And that's just the start of it.
Yeah, I think he went off on a longer rant after that.
Yeah, but that's a good one. Thanks, nobody, for that quote.
He never goes off on rants. Oh, wait.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, I miss him.
Totally.
And he makes an interesting point here, and that is that people just don't want to believe it's true about their government.
It's just so normal to them.
Right. Oh, no, our government respects rights.
Not even close.
There's a constitution.
Yeah, that quote, he nailed it. You know, nobody hits the nail on the head on a very regular basis as far as his criticisms of the government goes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it also reminds me of David Ridley's article he posted today about independence on Free Keen. It starts off with a picture that I was like, what the heck am I looking at? And it was
a picture
of a guy being tortured in like Iraq or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, why does it start off with that? And he says, this is the type of thing your federal government is doing. This is why we need to break away from. This is what we're up against.
Toronto had a Republican crack-smoking mayor for a while, so no, I don't know if I believe you when you say that they're leaning communist.
Well, but this is what I was told for the Communist Party. But see, you remember a long time ago, Jamaica had a lot of economic crisis, I remember, maybe 25 years ago,
And I've asked Jamaican friends, as why were they having so much economic problems? And what they have told me was that they were communists, they were brothers, and socialists, and the Jamaicans decided to go communist way, and then that's when they start getting the sanctions. And so the economic collapse that you always talk about is because they impose sanctions.
Like, I know, that's the standard line from the communist governments of the world, and it's absolute malarkey. Now, I will say this, sanctions are definitely not a good thing, and I oppose them. I don't think that the government gangs of the world should be imposing sanctions. Just let people make decisions on their own about who they want to deal with around the world. So they certainly don't help a given country. But if you look at, for instance, Venezuela, which is in a very, you know, climatic zone. It's in an easy place to grow crops, and
it,
you know,
floats like a raft on an ocean of oil.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of natural resources there. There's no reason why, even with sanctions, that Venezuela should be as piss poor as it currently is. It's because of socialism. Yeah. It's because of communism.
There was a coconut boat full of coconuts and coconut milk going to North Korea, and then they seized the boat.
We've talked in the recent past about how Twitter is on fire. The Free State Project Twitter page is just outstanding.
Oh, yeah. Jeremy Kaufman's running that thing. He's killing it.
Crushing it. Well, now, I don't know if you've heard of this. Have you heard of the Progressive State Swap application?
Well, I know the Progressive State Project is sort of a humorous takeoff on the Free State Project.
So,
created by Free Staters.
There's a Google Doc.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been posted publicly, where you will be paid if you leave New Hampshire if you're a socialist or someone who finds it abhorrent in the direction that New Hampshire's going,
mm-hmm.
like
awesome.
the liberty direction. If you don't like the liberty direction, these guys will pay to move you wherever you want to
go. How much money?
There's a whole questionnaire associated with it. What do you describe yourself as? What are your political leanings? What's your email address? I'll read it to you. Are you a progressive or socialist currently living in New Hampshire? Are you dissatisfied with the direction the state is headed? Are you dedicated to progressive and socialist values? Do you dream of moving to a state that is more aligned with your values? Would you like financial help to migrate to that state?
Mm.
The winners of this contest will illustrate how libertarians and progressives can work together to ease political tensions by swapping one libertarian and one progressive between states.
It's a win-win.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.